Season 4, Episode 12, Upstairs, Downstairs. It opens with the meeting between Sipowicz and Russell, because Russell really wanted a drink. I don't know about you, but this scene was pretty awkward.
I don't think that was the awkward scene of this episode.
Oh, no.
Wait till it happens. Yeah. I thought that scene was okay.
I think the scene is bookended by awkward scenes, but I think it's awkward just because it seems like she's reaching out for someone to understand and, like, sympathize, and Sipowicz's response to everything is just, don't drink.
I think that's because he knows that all she's feeling in her head right now is drink, drink, drink. That's what I think. I think he probably has been there before. Like, maybe he hasn't felt the exact same things she's feeling now, but, like, he's been at that place where he's going through something and all his brain is telling him is to, like, go to the bar, you know?
It's interesting because Russell, as we know, if you've been following the journey on NYPD Blue Balls, Russell had a run-in with Jimmy Leary, and he gave her a roofie, and it leaves it completely open to interpretation whether or not he took advantage of her and lied about it. But
that's all very foggy.
And what's weird,
like the episode, it's like the episode took a roofie.
The only point I wanted to make and highlight is, at least it seemed, and maybe this is why the episode is bookended with these two conversations with Russell and other people, is she's very much like reaching out, like, okay, this is why I want to drink, this is why I feel I have to drink, and then Sipowicz, instead of going, okay, tell me about it, is like, don't drink. Whatever the problem is, just don't drink. And maybe that's what a sponsor's for. It just seemed very, not cold, but stiff. But that's also Sipowicz in a nutshell, kind of.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to understand that when you call Sipowicz, you're not going to get someone who's going to talk about your feelings. He's going to be more of, his mission is, hey, I need to make sure she doesn't drink, because that's what she wants. She doesn't want to drink. So that's all I'm here to do. I don't think he's going to talk to her about, like, the weird shit she just, like, spills out, you know?
Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where two brothers, me being Kirk, the other voice being Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. When we come back from the theme song, an off-duty cop is involved in a shooting outside of it's either a deli or a bodega. I think it was a deli.
Correct. It was a bodega, Kirk.
It was a bodega?
It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Okay, I did not realize this. I'm not from the New York. I don't know these things.
No, I've learned this. It depends on your skin color what you call it.
Okay.
If you're white, you call it a deli.
If you're not white, you call it a bodega?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So this deli, no, this guy is an off-duty cop, he's involved in the shooting, and it appears that he was trying to foil a robbery, or attempted robbery, of, he says, two Puerto Ricans who was trying to rip off his friend, Tony Moore, who is a singer, and they were trying to steal his attaché case. Which was important, which is important to say until the rest of the episode happened. Then they kept saying briefcase.
They say fucking attaché case so many times.
But they only say it in that scene. The rest of the time it's briefcase.
So many goddamn times they're just throwing out the word attaché case.
One of the writers loves the word attaché.
Attaché.
The guy's story is he came out of the bodega, and he saw these two gentlemen trying to rob his friend, so he threw shots, as they say. One of the guys shot his friend directly in the chest, and while he killed one, the other one got away with the attaché case. And the guy he's super sentimental about his friend, talking about growing up with him, and saying that there's nothing in the case except for sheet music. And
they keep talking about how he's a musician. Yeah, he keeps talking about him being Tony Moore, right?
Yeah,
you know the singer Tony Moore.
And there was a moment where he was like, "You ever heard this one song by Tony and the Whatevers?" And Sipowicz just
Tony and the Tetanuses or something like that.
The Tetanuses, yes, Tony Moore and the Tetanuses. So now we have to make a punk band called Tony Moore and the Tetanuses. Because that's a pretty
Tony Moore and the Tetanuses, bro.
But what I loved is he said that, and Sipowicz just says, there was a lot of doo-wop records back then. Just like, I don't have time for this, man.
Yeah, but we Sipowicz is into that shit, though, you know?
It's true. He's the guy's obvious. This is another example of a dude trying to reach out, supposedly, and Sipowicz is like, yeah, whatever. They have Russell check the plates on the cars. Simone gets a little suspicious by saying, like, hey, so you guys arrive together.
His fucking energy is really weird, Simone, because I feel like...
He's suspicious.
His energy is... Well, no, yeah, but he's more suspicious, like... I feel he comes off like, you fucking her?
You know? Yeah.
Like, it came off like, where'd you guys go? Why are you guys wearing the same clothes? This is weird.
Yeah.
Like, awkward. What's going on? Comes off more like, you're trying to get into that?
It's also funny because they've been partners maybe for like a year and change. They trust each other, in quotes. And just the idea that Simone sees them walk in together and his first thought is, you fucking my girl, dude? What the hell? Like, it's just, like, immediate football bullshit.
It kind of felt like that. It was awkward.
They get done with Zorzi. That's the cop's name, the off-duty cop, Zorzi.
Mike Zorzi, bro.
When they come back to the house after that night, which, this is the big question, that was all at night when they did this investigation? Where is the night crew?
Yeah, early morning.
Oh, is it early morning? I assumed it was night.
Well, it's like 2, 3 in the morning.
Because when
Greg comes in, he goes, they got you up early on that shooting, huh?
Oh, I didn't even notice that, and I watched it twice.
Yeah, Greg comes in with the secondary, part of the secondary role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys
and
were...
And he's like, hey, they got you in early for that shit, huh?
your Medavoy impression is just spot on. Just excellent.
Your Medavoy's the worst.
Simone runs the whole... story through Fancy, and while he's doing that, Sipowicz comes in and says Tony Moore was tested for, or was shown positive for coke in his nostrils.
And his nose, a little nose blows, bro.
A little nose candy, a little snow, little flurries, little sugar plum dancers in his head. He...
Gonna go hit the slopes.
Gonna go, you know...
Gonna go hit the slopes.
Gonna hit that go juice. But
gonna hit that go-go juice, baby.
So now they have to test Zorzi for coke. And because he's a cop, and cops are weird about when you ask any questions of their own that may implicate...
Cops are weird when you ask them to, you know, abide by rules and do what you're supposed to do.
Because they go downstairs, and because they have to get Zorzi to go do a... I forgot what they called it, but it's a drug test. But
Dole test.
They have to go get a. He has to go get a dole test, and you know they're hesitant. And even Fancy's like, "Do you want me to do it?" When they seem hesitant, and they go downstairs, and Mike Zorzi's telling stories like, "Yeah, man, when they were on the street corner and they were harmonizing." Sipowicz
on that block singing their doo-wops, old white guys
in their leather jackets when they were the Bumblebees. Is that what they were? Always said.
Forgot about them.
They pull Zorzi aside. And they're like, hey, man, so he tested positive for coke. And he's like, look, man, he respected cops. No, he didn't. He was doing coke with a cop. So he doesn't. And then he's like, well, you're going to have to go get tested. And he's like, look.
No, but you end up, I mean, not to jump to him, I'm sorry, but you end up finding out that, like, the dude did not respect that this guy was a cop at all.
No, not at all. And
not at all.
And his piss is clean, right? So
who's pissed?
Zorzi's. Later in the episode, we find out his piss is clean.
Yeah.
So what's the point of freaking out about it?
Oh, 100%. Like, why are you losing your mind?
Because if he just said, because that would have that made him even more suspicious, at least in my opinion. If he was like, okay, you want me to get tested? I get it because he had drugs in his system. I was not aware of it. I don't have drugs in my system. I'll go get tested. Instead, he makes a big scene downstairs, and now all the uniform cops are pissed at Simone and Sipowicz because they think they're going after their own. They're rats.
They're doing IAB shit.
And especially the Sarge, Baumgartner, who's a complete asshole.
He does a good job, though.
Yeah,
the guy who plays him does a good job being him. That dude is a dick.
Yeah, he's like, well, he's a good guy. Who's the bad guy here? He's freaking out, yelling at him. And Sipowicz and Simone are just asking, is there any reason why you would impede this investigation? Like, why are you doing these things? Real quickly, when they head out to the car, Sipowicz mentions the next time we have to talk to Swords that we bring him up to the squad. I don't know if you noticed this, but they get in the car to have a little heart-to-heart about Russell.
Uh-huh.
When Sipowicz opens the door, he just slams the car next to him with his door.
Oh, I did not see this.
Yeah, I think they took out the sound, or they just didn't have the sound recording at the time. But when he opens the door, he just slams his door into the car next to him, and then gets into
it.
And I watched it I rewound twice, because I was like, because I've accidentally done that, where I lost, like, I lost control of the door when I was opening it.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that would have been loud. But they just had him slam into the car next to him. Not super important.
I mean, you're also super slow.
Yeah, so. I mean, I'm basically the Hulk. And what he says to him is like, look, she's looking to drink, and she's worried she's going to lose you. And Simone, a really funny quote is, he's like, are you sure you're not breaking some 12-step secret handshake by telling me this? Which,
yeah, that was just him. That was just him being frustrated. I get that.
But yeah, what's cool is he apologizes immediately. But it's just like him then expressing his own frustration, where he's like, "I called this scene when I wrote in the notes two dudes talking about a woman they clearly don't understand the problem because they're like,
you need to work on your scene naming."
Well, yeah, I mean it was.
It should be like two words, three words max. I call this scene Bummer Time, you know?
I call this scene Bummer Time.
Bummer Time. No, but I get what you're saying. Yeah, I think that's great. Well, that's what happens a lot when it comes to her, is it is just a lot of, it's a lot of men thinking they know what's going on with women. And I feel like that's this whole show. I think that's just what this show is sometimes. It's just like, they always think they know what's going on with her, and they have no fucking idea.
Yeah, I mean, it also kind of helps the story along in terms of what happens at the end, that they clearly don't know what's going on. So they have to highlight how little they understand.
Yeah, but not to jump to the end, but it's still infuriating, because when what leads to the next episode is like, a man is this, like, hero person who helped her. You know what I mean? We'll talk about it when it happens, but...
There's a lot of problematic things with the end of this episode, which...
Yeah.
I thought of and we'll bring up, but... In terms of the case, they track down this guy that was a running buddy of the DOA. I think... What's his name? Is it, like, Tommy Rock? Bobby Rock.
Bobby Rock.
He's a
recurring face.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
They used him before.
The actor's name is Yancey Arias, and I immediately recognized his face. And it turns out he's been in NYPD Blue episodes, but he's also been that movie Legion, which isn't a great movie. It's just I remember that he was in it. They go get Bobby.
Never seen Legion.
It's not very good. It's a cool idea, and then it's just disappointing to watch. He comes in because he's a former running buddy of the DOA, and they think he's this second guy. And the dude does a really good job, because his entire point is basically, not only am I not the guy, I'll stand in a lineup, I'll do whatever, and if I was there, my friend wouldn't be dead.
Yeah, he's making a point of that.
That, I wish I knew who did it, because I'd be taking care of it myself, and... He wouldn't be in this position if I was there. And at one point, because Sipowicz goes hard on him and grabs his jaw when he's being uncooperative in Sipowicz's eyes. And Bobby Rock says, Simone says, will you stand in the lineup? And he goes, yeah, if this asshole lets go of my jaw. And then Sipowicz lets go of his jaw. And then he says, yeah, I'll stand in your lineup.
No, I thought that was a really good acting scene. They all play really, really well off each other. I enjoyed that.
When they leave that interrogation, there's a really small scene that I'll highlight, because Cohen is in this for like half a second. And it's when he walks by Fancy and says, "How's the coffee, Lieutenant?" Proving that nobody likes Cohen, Fancy just goes, "I don't know, Cohen." Like, he does, it's just completely dismissive.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, it happens so...
I must have just not even noticed it. That's crazy.
It's so fast, and like, he just comes through really quick and goes, "How's the coffee, Lieutenant?" And Lieutenant goes, "I don't know." This is when Fancy mentions that Zorzi was clean off the test, and they say, well, Bobby Rock is not the one who did it. And then a witness comes up who is a Indian cab driver. Now, this is sticky territory in terms of declaring... racism, because this Indian fellow, who is, I assume he's Indian, I could be wrong, but what's his name? I wrote it down.
Rajneesh something.
Rajneesh Prasad. He's a cab driver who saw what happened with Zorzi, and he's like, "Yeah, I saw a shooting. I'm sorry I didn't report it." And they go to talk to him, and he is not a fan of Puerto Ricans. He's not a fan of Italians. He makes fun of the fact that Koreans can't speak English. There's a lot of racial content from this Rajneesh. And
yeah, I don't know, man. But, like, it's funny because, like, as he's saying all this he's talking all this craziness, Sipowicz is kind of looking at him like, "Look at this fucker."
When Sipowicz has probably said the same thing.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, this dude's over here, like, kind of talking crazy and shit, and Sipowicz is, like, sitting back with this look kind of like, "Look at this guy saying this shit. How can he talk like that?"
And
this is funny.
He says that the way that it went down, there was only one Puerto Rican gentleman and an Italian gentleman involved in an altercation, and he assumed the Puerto Rican was robbing the Italian. And then a different man came out of the bodega and shot at the Puerto Rican guy, and that's all he saw. He states definitively that there was no second Puerto Rican, which throws a wrench in there.
Yeah, that makes them all confused. They have no idea what's happening.
And he makes the comment after he says, like, "I was robbed by a Puerto Rican. Italians, they're cheap. They only pay, they'll, like, tip with 25 cents and they're rude. Koreans, they don't speak English." And then he's like, "I assumed that the Puerto Rican was robbing the Italian man." And then said, "But that gives that one guy no, it doesn't give the right to guy to shoot somebody in the street like John Wayne. We have laws, and without laws, this isn't a city, it's a jungle."
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was weird.
It's just a weird interview, like, because this man's, like, coming in to do the right thing, but then at the same time, he's got, like, a lot of fucked up issues. It was just interesting. They're, like, all of the interviews in this episode I thought were really good.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, all the times that they talked to them, like, everything was really, really good.
The interview that Kirk and Dahl and Medavoy do, I think those were pretty sweet. They're going forward, and they try to talk to Zorzi, and they try to bring him upstairs. And this causes a pretty interesting altercation between the uniformed cops and the detectives. I'm not going to describe the whole thing, because it would take way too long. It's just the sergeant says, "Call your delegate to Zorzi," because he thinks they're going to pin this on him. They say that Sipowicz and Simone are acting like IAB, which, of course, Sipowicz takes umbrage with publicly.
Yeah, Sipowicz doesn't like being called a rat.
He then accuses the sergeant of being drunk, and the sergeant says, "I'll piss in your hands to get it tested." He basically says,
like, "Put your hands together," and, like, pulls on his dick.
Sipowicz, you know, he walks away, which is very big of Sipowicz, and he says a line that I wrote down, or I tried to, but it got very small. "Digestion, blood pressure, everything gonna be out of whack whole rest of the day, 'cause I walk without hitting this turd."
That was a funny line.
And as they're walking upstairs, a different uniform cop calls them assholes, and that's when Bobby Batman Simone squares up to this dude, eye to eye, nose to nose, and gets real jock with this dude. And it's a fantastic Simone scene.
It was, because he was projecting Sip.
And it was great,
because Sipowicz was mad and walking up the stairs, and then so he's like, "No, I'm gonna step in for him. I got it. I got this one."
And after he stares this dude down and kind of makes him blank, he then says to the entire crew of people, "No one's looking to hurt him."
But it's weird that they're so mad because they haven't done anything out of the ordinary.
Like, that's the thing that bothers me, and maybe it's the whole point of the episode. It seems to me like the cops are acting like, okay, well, he definitely did something wrong, so we have to protect him. It's not, hey, let him go clear his name, let him cooperate as much as he can, tell the whole story again, maybe he missed something the first time he talked to him. They're just running down all possibilities, it's part of their job. It's okay, well, they're getting him drug tested, he's obviously going to test positive for drugs. Or...
yeah.
Like, they're going to go talk to him. They obviously think he's involved and they're going to pin it on him. There's no level head in that room, but that's the whole point of the episode. There's no level head in that section of the precinct to go, guys, why are we freaking out about this? Maybe they want to talk to him more about the case and ask him questions because he was fucking there. But
yeah, everything you're saying ends up getting played out.
Like, yeah.
Okay, go ahead. But yeah, I agree with you, yeah.
Because that's the whole point of the episode. It's to create, like, this us and them mentality. The thing that cracks the case is Russell finds a woman whose car was parked on the street who doesn't live anywhere close to there. And when they brought her up to the squad, this desk sergeant was like, "Man, now you're going after Zorzi's marriage?" And they're like, "What are you even talking about?" And he's like, "Up yours, whatever," and like storms downstairs. And then they realize, oh shit, that's probably Zorzi's mistress. That's a pretty big coinky dink. And
yeah, so that's the whole thing, like, maybe then why they're freaking out makes sense because they know he's a dick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, the moment Baumgartner realizes, like, oh shit, maybe he did something.
Yeah.
Because he's like, he walks back that they brought up his mistress because they don't even know it's his mistress. So
they have no idea.
So he goes downstairs and then Sipowicz makes a play on the woman. He goes really bold with it and said, "Why did Mike want you to leave the car there?"
Yeah, and it catches Sipowicz off guard.
Or it kept Simone. Because Sipowicz made the play.
Sorry, yeah. It catches Simone off guard.
And the woman breaks down and says, "Look, Mike just told me to leave the car there and then come pick it up at a different time." And they're like, "Okay," and that's it. And she's like, "Well, he came over this morning and took a briefcase out of the car.
He just happened to stop by."
So now they're like, "Okay, so this is what happened. He obviously did this, and we're going to have to go get him."
Yeah, but they still, like, can't put it on him, you know? Like, they don't have the case or anything yet.
And also, right before that woman comes in, this scene I missed the first time I watched it, and then I caught it on the second one. While that woman comes in, Sipowicz is on the phone with a lawyer. And he's very aggressive with this guy. And he ends the conversation with, "Just end our little chat suggesting that you kissed my Polish ass." Mm-hmm. And he gets off the phone and he says, "Yeah, that was a lawyer for some mobsters out in Las Vegas who said that Moore won a bunch of money betting down there. And if we recover the funds in the right amount, everything should be fine." He's like, "Oh, so he was moving mob money."
Well, that's what they think. Like, I think that was just like, that to me felt like a great jump. You know what I mean?
A very convenient thing.
That to me felt like a huge jump that they just took. But
when they run this by Fancy, Medavoy tells Sipowicz that someone messed with his car. Sipowicz runs downstairs.
Well, doesn't he just tell him, this doesn't matter, but doesn't he just say, "Go downstairs"?
He says,
"Have you seen your car?"
He just says, "Have you seen your car lately?"
Yeah, he doesn't really tell him what happens to it. He just goes, "Have you seen it yet?"
And so Sipowicz rolls down there and sees that someone scratched the word rat into his car. So Sipowicz busts back in, and he said, "Who's the yellow son of a bitch or yellow bastard that scratched rat into my car?" Fucking berates them, saying, "None of you have the back to say this to my face." And then he says, "Don't write rat on my car, rat, write rat on me." And then he picks out Shannon, who is a uniform cop, and goes right for him. Now, the reason I think he did that is because he knows that of all the dudes downstairs, Shannon might be the guy that tells him who did it.
No.
I think that's what happened.
I think he goes after Shannon because he knows Shannon would have never done that.
Yeah,
he also knows Shannon would have never written rat on his car. But he also knows that Shannon wouldn't get upset if he started yelling at him. Shannon knows him and would be like, "Oh, Andy's just pissed. Like, just he. I get it. Like, I'm. Okay." That's why he's. That's why like he like it's such a small confrontation. I feel like. I don't know. I feel like Shannon knows him better than that, and Sipowicz knows him and knows that he would never do that.
I think it's a combination of both of our things. I think in Sipowicz's mind, he busts downstairs, he's in the lobby, he sees all these guys, and he's like, okay, who's the person who definitely didn't do this, and who's going to be the one person that, if I start screaming at him, he's be like, "Look, man, I didn't do this," and then would actually come by and tell me later. Like, who is the guy that would do that? That'd be Shannon. And I think that's why he goes after him. There's a moment when the whole squad comes downstairs and Fancy keeps him up on the landing. Like, it's the fucking... the Jets and the whatever. I don't know West Side Story.
The Jets and the Skeeters?
I don't know.
It's huge, not the Skeeters.
I know, huge fans of West Side Story are going to be upset that I started the metaphor, couldn't finish it.
What is it? Jets and the what?
I don't know.
It's weird that we don't have any way of figuring it out. We'll just be lost forever.
Yeah, as we talk on the internet. Sipowicz kind of ends the whole conversation by saying, like, "Look, the guy's an asshole, but I won't even put the bracelets on him."
Sharks.
The Sharks and the Jets.
Sharks and the Jets. Just think hockey, bro.
Mortal enemies. Sharks and Jets. So Sipowicz rolls upstairs, and as he's rolling upstairs, someone screams something at him, and Baumgartner says, "Shut your mouth." Fancy also yells at Baumgartner to get control of his people. And then after Baumgartner says, "Shut your mouth," Sipowicz says, "Oh yeah, Baumgartner, you think you're starting to come to the realization you backed the wrong horse."
Well, and then also earlier, we kind of glossed over it, but... Sipowicz makes an accusation that Baumgartner's drinking on the job.
Yeah, I think I said that. Well, you said that he had liquor on his breath.
Oh, did you say that?
Yeah, that's why he did the piss thing.
I don't remember hearing it.
It's cool. It's fine. You don't pay attention. That's fine.
I heard you say the piss test thing, but I didn't hear the...
I think I
thought he was drunk.
I think I kind of like
it. Before that, I didn't hear that part.
I think I laid it underneath the...
Laying it like tile, bro?
Laying it like tile. So they set up with IAB, who comes in with a warrant for Zorzi. And we have Martens, one of my favorite characters, who's in, like, the entire series. He's the IAB guy. He congratulates Bobby on getting first grade, and Bobby's kind of a dick about it.
Do you think that was a dig at Martens? I mean, at Sipowicz?
No, I don't. I think, in all honesty, I think Martens is just trying to be nice to them because he has to be with them for the next couple minutes to do something very uncomfortable, which is arrest another police officer, something he does all the time. So
but he comes off so douchey.
I think, I don't know, maybe that's just perception of him. Because I seriously thought he went to Fancy, he's like, "I got the warrant for Zorzi, who's going to go with us? Simone and Sipowicz, if that's okay." And then as he walks out with them, they, like, grab their coats, and they're clearly not stoked to do this. So, Martens...
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think they're happy that they have to go collect this cop guy, and, like, I don't think that's, like, something they were, like, looking forward to doing, you know what I mean?
He then says, "Hey, you get a taste of what we do every day, the Rat Squad," and Sipowicz is like, "Oh, I hope this doesn't mean we have to hold hands all the way there." They...
There's a lot of good Sipowitz one-liners in this.
Yeah, he's killing it. They go pick up Zorzi, and he's given the IAB interview, and he's talking about why he did it, and he's obviously a complete fucking dickhead.
Yeah, because now he's in selling it mode, you know?
He's, like, bragging about the plan. He's admitting his guilt and bragging about it. And his reason is, my wife is sick, and Tony Moore was flashing money, so I killed him and another guy to take his money. And
he keeps emphasizing, like, he had this plan in his head, and it made him crazy, you know?
And then he also says, like, man, if I only just left the country, you guys would be scratching your balls. And
yeah, that pisses off, I think, Simone. Sipowitz is constantly yelling through the whole thing.
Yeah, he gets more and more pissed, and the one that I did, the one I did right was, eventually he ends up in the mirror room, the room where you can watch the interrogation. He's in there with...
He gets kicked out, right?
Well, he gets kicked out of the room. He gets kicked out of the room where the interrogation's happening.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the mirror room, and he's, like, still huffing and puffing, and then eventually he gets reprimanded and calmed down by Simone and Fancy, because he screams at the window, "You murdering scumbag nitwit."
And Martenzio's, "Can someone shut him up?"
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Because he's ruining the interview. He's going to taint it. But Zorzi's is an idiot. Because he also gets mad when Zorzi was like, the thing I wasn't expecting was you guys to find out about my mistress. And then Simone goes, "Oh, you mean we weren't gonna collect evidence of the crime scene?" That was really funny.
Sipowitz says, like, "Oh, we weren't gonna canvass the cars at the scene." And then he said, "Yeah, and then I came up with that phony second suspect to keep the suspicion off me." He's like, "Oh, yeah, that phantom Puerto Rican that we figured out in less than 28 minutes." Like, he's just all over the place.
Because he's an idiot. Zorzi was an idiot.
So he's in there with IAB, and he's finishing up, and Baumgartner comes in for, like, a half-assed apology. And
Sipowitz isn't fucking having it.
No, Sipowitz says he can, like, kiss his ass, and the guy's like, "Well, what about my stripes?" And Simone reminds him that he suggested he cup his hands to take his piss. If he wants to get all serious.
And Sipowitz tells him he can shove his stripes up his ass.
Yeah, it was a good scene. Because it was like Baumgartner can...
Baumgartner says that there's nothing worse than a reformed souse.
Yeah, I wrote that down too.
Now, was he trying to say sauce?
I don't know.
Or is souse a word?
Souse might be a word that I've never heard of before.
Is that like an old-timey way of calling someone a drunk, you know?
I mean, it could be. It could be that
he's just trying to say sauce and sounded like an idiot.
I mean, it might be. There's a whole lot of terminology that I was not aware of until NYPD Blue, so maybe it is. I'm sure that it is, and we just are ignorant to it. But it was a pretty good line. To quickly go through the other case, because it's pretty cool, but it's not super important. Kirkendall and Medavoy get a dump job.
It's pretty cool. Like, what's cool about it, Kirk?
Well, it's a cool little case. It's a cool side case. Because it's interesting and quick, and parts of it are funny. Because it opens with a girl in a dumpster, and she's, like, 17 years old, tattoos and belly button rings, and...
Which leads to a bunch of old people talk.
Well, yeah, what I love was, is that... I love this, because this is Medavoy. Is that an earring in her navel? It would make it a belly button ring. Yeah, he's like, "Is it one of those?"
He don't know that.
And then he goes, "It's one of those pierce jobs." Well, yeah, they put a hole in the body. That's what piercing is. Kirkendall's like, "Oh, if I set foot in the house with any of this crap,
my dad would have smacked me."
They discover she has a porno question mark in her pocket called Crusherama 18.
Oh, it's a fetish video for sure.
And for all those 90s kids out there, there's a Blockbuster reference with "Got a Feeling It's Not in the G Section of Blockbuster," which I don't remember there being a G Section of Blockbuster.
No, I just remember that if they had, like, rated R movies or, like, covers that were risque, they just put like a regular Blockbuster tag up with just the name of it. You know what I mean? And they didn't have like, maybe New York was different, but it's like when they used to always show those things of like people going into video stores and then they go into the back
room
to like get pornos. I've never seen a store like that.
No, never. I've never been there.
Ever in my entire life. Ever. If you happen to know where one is, if you could just send me an address.
Give me a ring. Give me a ring-a-ding-ding. They watch the tape, which is just this girl smashing earthworms on a map of New York.
Weird.
They talk about how weird it is. And then, you know, because this is 2019 and we have the internet, I was sitting there thinking, this isn't that crazy. There's way worse out there made by way sicker people. So...
Yeah, but at the time, that was really weird for white America, Kurt.
And it's weird, the idea that this guy's fucking sending out tapes. Just the idea, the time it takes for production and distribution of tapes of women crushing earthworms. They get
Yeah, but at the time then, but at the time though, back then, he was making money, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's how, like, weirdos got their shit, was through... was through all that mailing stuff.
Weirdo shit network of videotapes.
Yeah, laugh all you want, man, but that's how they got their shit.
They get a address off the tape, they go to the guy's place, and the guy, for being a dude who sells crush tapes, he's not a bad dude, because he's like, yeah, I paid her to crush earthworms, it's not illegal. And even though now I'm pretty sure it'd be illegal to film a minor doing anything.
Well, no, it's not illegal to film a minor unless it's, like, probably sexual stuff.
I mean, even if you... But if you sell anything, if she's on something that you sell, you have to probably get permission from a parent or guardian. I'm sure there's some type of law against that. Then again, I don't know. Maybe she probably has to have a SAD card now, for all I know.
Well, she definitely has a SAD card, Kurt.
The director of these the director of these fetish videos gives him a boyfriend when they mention that she's dead. Also, I skipped over the
real. He turns into a real big pussy really fast.
I also skipped over the scene where they confirm who the girl is because her dad comes in, and
boring.
He cries a lot better than that dude in the diamond episode. The guy that did the. And they kill her.
That guy. The diamond episode was ridiculous.
Like, this guy, he's a little more believable crier. He also...
There's a lot of bad criers, you know?
Yeah. We need to get some good criers in NYPD Blue. The part that was really funny to me with that guy is... He's like, she turns 16 and suddenly everything's an argument. And then she came by the house with a friend who had tattoos and I hit the roof. And I was like, well, it's not your daughter. Like, her friend has tattoos. Yeah. Like, what... And then they show him the pictures of her dead, and he cries. When, that was cold.
Shows the pictures of the dead daughter. He cries. We move on. Fuck it. Let's go. Let's go. We're done. Dies, moves on. Shit happens. Good to go.
The boyfriend actually gets brought in on a traffic charge, and her boyfriend, who's named Will, is played by Danny Masterson, who is a famous face of...
Masterson, that Danny.
Famous face of NYPD Blue, of That 70s Show, the Ranch on Netflix, Scientology, and sexual assault charges.
He's no longer a part of The Ranch on Netflix.
Yeah.
He lost that.
He lost that after, you know, some women came forward, said that Masterson is not a master of his domain in terms of respect and consent. But he does a good job of being, like, this dude who, like, tatted, drugged, pierced dude.
Ashton Kutcher got away from him pretty fast. They've been boys for, well, publicly at least. Like, they've been boys for a real long time.
He went on that blocked list quick.
Well, I guess you can't, I guess you can't promote an app that helps, girls and the girls that are being, like, sold into, like, sexual slavery when your friend's, like, an asshole towards women.
It's not on brand. It's not on brand for
your investors aren't going to like it.
This is a really good interview, just because it's Kirkendall really taking the reins on the interview and just playing nice guy until Danny Masterson admits that he did coke and then stabbed her a bunch with a screwdriver.
But the way they get him there is pretty interesting.
Because, yeah, they do the slow and steady, maybe. He's like, yeah, I got really upset with her because she didn't want to do the coke after I brought the coke. And he's like, I went and took a walk until I calmed down, and when I came back, she was dead. Kirkendall,
what happened?
She just died.
She just died.
And Kirkendall did that thing where she did that thing that sometimes detectives do, where she's like, is it possible that you did this and you just are so sad you don't want to remember it that way? Because, you know,
she does the thing that moms do. What are you talking about?
Where she gets you to admit something by pretending like it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Look, we've all done coke, got angry, and killed someone with a screwdriver. So if you did it...
We've all crashed our car into the neighbor's lawn. Now just tell me, did you do it, yes or no?
I'm not going to be mad. I'm not going to send you away for murder.
I just want to know. My curiosity wants to know.
He admits to it. That case is closed. It's a good scene where he slowly breaks down and they write it up. But then we get to the end. And at the end of the episode, Sipowicz says that he's been trying to talk to Russell, who just kind of bailed halfway through this episode.
Yeah, she, like, is leaving, and Simone goes, where are you going? She's like, I gotta do things. And just runs out.
Sipowicz says, I've been trying to talk to her, and I'm getting nothing. Simone then has to go to Kirkendall to rain check their date, which is a big...
That's right, they were gonna go on a date.
It was a big bummer for Kirkendall, but he's like, can I get a rain check? And she's like, I understand. Kind of given the, I get it. You'd rather go after your alcoholic lady friend.
Yeah, does she know? Does she know about them?
I think she's pieced it together.
Like, he hasn't, like, told her, you know?
I don't think he's made it public, but I think she knows. It's one of those things where I'm pretty sure she knows.
Damn, but she was still going to let him play with them Kirkendalls, though.
Oh, yeah, he was going to... He's going to get all up in that Kirkendall, if you catch me drift.
No, what do you mean?
I can't sexualize her, because she has the haircut we had when we were children.
I don't know. If you can produce these pictures that you're pulling out of your ass, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't ever remember having that haircut. I remember having blonde hair and my hair cut short, but I don't remember having a lesbian haircut. There's nothing wrong with that, but I don't remember it.
Sipowicz and Simone part going to different areas to look for Russell, and it actually turns out she was just sitting at Simone's front door, or his apartment door. And this is an awkward scene where he holds her in a chair as she's describing an anxiety attack. I'm pretty sure that's what's happening. She's had, like, a day-whole anxiety attack.
Where she starts to talk about how she feels.
And it's assumed that she's talking about Leary. And even Simone is like, okay, you're talking about Leary? Leary drugged you? And she's like, I think something happened. I think I flirted, or I let him on. And Simone's like, no, the job put you there. You didn't do this. You didn't ask for this.
And she's not responding to anything he's saying.
Not
she's
really.
She's just, like, talking. It's really weird.
And it slowly but surely comes out that she's talking about her father, who did something to her when she was 12. And it ends with Simone kind of going, we'll get through this, you'll be fine, we'll get through this. And at one point he says, don't ever think I don't love you. And I was like, well, it sounds like Kirkendall's going to be on rain check for quite some time.
That dinner ain't happening.
I guess that's rain check to fucking never. He's like, okay, I'm going to be supportive. Obviously, we're going to get her some help. And it just kind of ends with her crying into him as they're... Maybe they're on the floor. I'm not sure. Either in a chair or on the floor. It's problematic for a couple reasons, but it's more problematic because of the next episode. I'll just say that I think if someone is in that situation, this is just a PSA for anybody who's listening, who actually listens to the show and watches the episodes. If you're dealing with someone who is that anxious, who is that big of a, who's clearly going through an anxiety attack or a emotional breakdown of that sort, take them to a hospital.
Well, yeah, and then if when during this anxiety attack, they come to the realization that she was raped for years, I don't think a detective from the 15th is equipped to handle that.
And it's more.
And then
of...
what's problematic is the next morning they wake up like nothing happened.
Well, I mean, we'll get there in the next episode. Little tease for everybody who's going to stick around. It's not even that they act like nothing happened. They act like what happened at the end of this episode solves it. Which, that could not be farther from the truth.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Like, you when you have a situation like this, you need to book therapy sessions the next day. You need to make steps. She shouldn't go to work.
Oh, it's the 90s. What did we know? What do we know? Like mental health, mental health, bro.
Anyway, is there anything else about this episode you would like to discuss?
Oh, no. I agree with you. Like, she needed to go get help right away.
Absolutely.
I hope that doesn't get lost in this talk about the joke. But I do agree with you on that. But it was the 90s, man. They didn't talk about mental health then.
Yeah, that's true. But I was...
Oprah came out and talked about how she was, like, molested or raped when she was younger by either her father or, like, a father figure. Mm-hmm. And everyone's attitude was kind of like, well, she makes $1 million now, so she can figure it out. Like, you know what I mean? That's just like... like, she's making tons of money. She figured it out. She got that shit together. Like, let's do it, guys.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you do have a point. At the time, they didn't really talk about it.
Oh, someone has a point. No, I think that was it. The secondary story is like, okay. It's just a little, it was interesting to see Kirkendall and Medavoy work together. You know, they don't really normally work. James Martinez, where's he in this whole thing? I feel like we didn't even talk about him.
I don't think he's here. I don't remember him
being
in it.
Yeah, I don't think he's in it. Oh, because this is still around when Gina's still hurt.
Because there's no...
So he's, like, out and about doing shit with her and, like, helping her.
Because I have no notes about him, so I don't know if he's around.
Yeah, I think he's in the next episode. He makes, like, a little appearance.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is available on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, and Stitcher. We are on Instagram at AstroBrothersPodcast, Twitter, AstroBrosPod, mostly just announcing when new episodes are out, which is every other Tuesday, schedules and time permitting. And keep watching NYPD Blue.
Keep watching.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, you could always check out the books True Blue, written by some of the creators and consultants on the show. You could check out An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, written by Gene Kendall on Amazon. It's only 99 cents. He goes through every single season of the show, kind of like we do, but in book form. You could also check out What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles about the show. If you have a moment, please go rate and review the show. It helps with visibility on the platforms to listen to it, and hopefully more people listen, and then they could watch NYPD Blue, because that's what this is really about, just a campaign to get more people watching. Also, I get a chance to look at your constructive criticism and not change much about the show, because we're doing it on limited time and with no budget for free. But thank you. I'll still read them. And of course, NYPD Blue is currently on Hulu and Amazon for streaming, so you can see every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue.